and sometimes throwing up.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
They say nothing good happens after midnight, but why not stay a while and find out?
Your library, your story. At the Kingston Frontenac Public Library, books are just the beginning. A library card starts a lifelong adventure, connecting you to everything you need to inspire learning, creativity, and fun. With 16 locations and plenty of online services, using your library has never been easier. Study in a quiet space, meet friends and learn new things, or explore the world through a magazine or a museum pass. Become a part of our story. Visit your local library branch or find us online at kfpl.ca.
This episode is a rerun.
Hello and welcome to Viewpoints. On today's show, journalist Mike McCulloch will again fill in for me this week, as he did last week with a documentary produced in Abbotsford, British Columbia. We'll be meeting with the musician Shamir Virgo, a singer-songwriter from Surrey, BC, who's enjoying some success. His song, Roses, has more than 1.7 million listens on Spotify and SoundCloud.
One of the first songs that he showed me that he wrote was a song called Roses. The first line, just a killer line, it goes, heartache covered in roses. You know, like, what a way to start a song. And then, boom, you're hooked. You're drawn right in.
Mike McCulloch, who will spend this half hour with Virgo, as well as with some of his friends and mentors.
The first day we met, we ended up just writing roses.
Yeah, we kind of like built off of it.
I don't know, it just came out naturally.
And then we're writing the song back and forth, had it on a loop.
When it came time to write the chords for Roses, and I was like, you know what? Let's apply some of the jazz harmony that we're learning. You know, after a few more writing sessions, we had a finished song between the two of us, and it came up fairly easily.
Yeah. Oh, wait.
I got sick of the sorrow, but I want to see you tomorrow.
With Shamir, we kind of go back and forth with this song since the last show even.
Yeah.
And it's been one of those fun spots for us.
For sure. Yeah.
But it's fun. I enjoy it. But keeps me going.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Greetings, nice to have you with us. My name is Boris Hassan. Shamir Virgo is a 23-year-old rhythm and blues recording artist and songwriter from Surrey, BC, who, when he's not attending class at the University of the Fraser Valley, has recently been wowing crowds and gaining a fan base performing around the Lower Mainland. Virgo is enjoying some early success with The Algorithm, one of his first songs, a track called Roses, which he wrote with friend Amir Kuro, has more than 1.7 million listens on Spotify and SoundCloud. In this brief look at one of Canada's exciting new artists, Mike McCulloch in Abbotsford caught up with Shamir and some of Shamir's friends, collaborators, and one-time mentor. Here's Mike McCulloch.
This is Shamir Virgo.
Heartache covered in roses. I'm done trying to control it. I'm waiting for you to see.
I genuinely just really love, I have a really great big love for music.
But I'd rather be with you than in my dreams.
Very blessed. Very blessed to be here right now and to be able to express and share my art in the way that I do. Yeah, thank you.
Maybe I could show you.
His likability was infectious. Everybody loved him.
He is so thoughtful and he is so sweet. It's great to know someone as awesome and talented as him.
You smile again.
But also have him as a really, really close friend.
Shamir was the complete package.
I'm waiting for you to see.
He has dope music.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Music for him is part of a thread in the tapestry of developing a community.
See you tomorrow.
Community is very important, not just with music, but just in general. It's very important for just us as humans.
Heartache covered in roses.
Roses by Shamir Virgo and Amir Koro. Yeah, Shamir told me that was the second song he ever wrote. And we'll get into that and much more in a conversation with Shamir on this edition of Viewpoints, brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative. I met with Shamir at CIVL Studios in the Student Union Building of the University of the Fraser Valley's Abbotsford campus. So nice to meet you, Shamir.
Nice to meet you, too.
That was the first of three meetups I had with Shamir over the course of about a week. The second was when Shamir and guitarist Elijah Williams welcomed me to a park in Surrey to see and hear their rehearsal for an upcoming show.
You got the list. Whoa.
I know.
In our interview, Shamir speaks about how much a collective he's part of called Couch Jams Collective offers him a sense of community. I was able to visit with Shamir in Vancouver and meet about a dozen plus people affiliated with Couch Jams, gathered after a performance in the Mount Pleasant area. And Shamir, you know, he took the time to one by one introduce me to each and everyone there. And although I didn't record any interviews that night, I did come away with an impression of a young man who, for as musically talented as Shamir is, he is equal parts kind, thoughtful, and generous. An opinion shared, by the way, by Shamir's former high school musical theater teacher, John Harris, and ditto those sentiments from friend and musical collaborator, Amir. All right, let's get to know Shamir Virgo. This track is apropos, as it was the first song Shamir wrote. It's 2019's Fade in Love.
I think I was always, like, involved in music, like, growing up. So, like, when I was younger, I used to sing in church. We used to have like a children's choir that I would like sing at, and we would just like be doing like different arrangements of different songs, and then we would go and like perform them for like Saturday church or like just performances, like concerts that we would host. And then like in high school I did some like musical theater, and then also just kind of dabbled in music, so I've always been around it. Somewhere along the lines of like end of high school, I was like, wow, like I really love music, I really enjoy and embody like all that I want to be when I'm around music, so like why don't I like create something, you know? My teacher, Mr. Harris, he was the one that kind of like fostered that growth. He was the one that pushed me forward and was like, hey, you should continue to do this. You should continue to, you know, pursue music. You sound great. This is something that like not a lot of people are able to do or able to like even stick with or even have the drive to stick with. And if you love it so much, then you should continue to do it. Yeah.
I thought back in those days, I don't know where his future is going to take him, but I really, really hope that he pursues this gift. And he has.
Mr. Harris, if it wasn't for him, I'd say I probably wouldn't be doing this right now.
To be able to be a part, be a small little, tiny little building block in the life of a student like that is a great honor. And it gives a meaning and a purpose to how you've spent your life in a way that's incredibly gratifying. My name's John Harris. I taught Shamir at a Langley Public School. It was called the UConnect Education Center. It was actually in three different locations, but Shamir participated in two of them, I think.
This was at Lochiel UConnect, so out in Langley.
Shamir showed right from the get-go tremendous musical aptitude.
I feel I just fell in love with you like a song on the radio.
He was a dream to work with as a musical theater teacher. I find that it's very difficult to get a blend of skills where a student can act and sing well. And Shamir was, right from the beginning, the complete package.
Are you different? Feels different.
The thing that really struck me musically was that not only did he have the musical skills, he had just excellent pitch and phenomenal ability to learn music quickly.
Case in point, here's Shamir with Elijah working out Emmanuel's Need You.
I feel I need you to breathe. Yeah. I feel I need you to breathe.
episode of Viewpoints is a rerun.
The tone in his voice was a mixture between this soothing melodic sound with some bite if he needed it. Really unusually beautiful tonal qualities in his voice.
For me, it started out as just wanting to like do something that I enjoyed, and music being the thing that I really, really did enjoy. I was like, well, I really want to dive at first into this. And so I didn't really know what that looked like, you know, and like what I had to do to grow at that point. But over now, looking back over the years, because of my like love for music and wanting to like get better and know more about it, it sort of became the driving force that led me to like want to do better and want to know more and want to improve my craft and as a singer, as well as just like a musician as well, because I play guitar. And so, yeah, it just really drove me to do better and want to know more. I think at that point I had just started dabbling in terms of just like songwriting, just putting things together here and there. I think I had like made my first single at that point. And then I had just shown him some of the stuff that I had done, because it's just like, you know, you were around music, like not a lot of people at that time in my life were musicians or really understood or cared to understand like music in general. So I was just like, okay, like this is something that I've done, like what do you think, what are your thoughts, you know?
One of the first songs that he showed me that he wrote was a song called Roses. The first line, just a killer line, it goes, heartache covered in roses. Like what a perfect tension between some of the nicer parts of love and the inevitable challenges of love. You know, like he in a couple of words, he paints a picture that like a paradoxical cognitive dissonance that, you know, like what a way to start a song. And then boom, you're hooked. You're drawn right in.
Good friend of mine, Amir Koro, he also makes music as well. He was the one that actually like put all of the or most of the instrumentation together in terms of like the arrangement. I was just looking for people to work with in terms of like musicality, because at that point I didn't know anybody around me really who did music or knew about music. And so I was just asking around, and one of my friends, Jay, who I had played with at church, he had connected me to Amir. He was like, yeah, like my friend Amir, he also makes music, like you guys should connect.
What's really interesting actually is that Shamir and I have mutual friends through church. So the same friends that I grew up playing with at church are also the ones that he knows.
I shot him a message.
He first sent me an Instagram DM.
And like asked if he would be free to, I guess, meet up and like talk about, you know, our musical experiences, and he responded.
And so it was a really, really natural connection.
Kind of started from there and just continued to talk, and then
he asked, hey, do you want to get together and perhaps work on some music? And so I said, yeah, absolutely, would love to.
That led down the road of being able to like jam and just sing with him. And
given that we were both, you know, at that time in the same, you know, kind of in the same communities, kind of like going to the same things, listening to the same music, it just felt very natural to infuse that into our own styles.
Yeah, that's how it started.
He was a really, really nice guy, so it was a no-brainer to me, you know, to go and collaborate together and have fun. The first day we met, we ended up just writing Roses.
Yeah, we kind of like built off of it.
I don't know, it just came out naturally.
And then we're writing the song back and forth, had it on a loop.
When it came time to write the chords for Roses, I was still studying actually at Capilano, and I was at Capilano's jazz program. And I was like, you know what? Let's apply some of the jazz harmony that we're learning. Let's put it on a song. And, you know, after a few more writing sessions, we had a finished song between the two of us, and it came up fairly easily. He also takes initiative really well. If there's something that he wants to get done and he's like, I'll write the verse and get back to you, he will do it. The entire second verse of Roses was written entirely by him. After our first session, I was like, oh, we're missing a second verse. And he said, sure, I'll write it. And so then he just came back to me the next week and then said, all right, done. And I was like, this is great.
And then after the song was finished, we went and outsourced like different musicians that would be able to uplift the track and uplift the song better than we knew how to.
And the rest is history.
Today, between Spotify and SoundCloud plays, Roses has been listened to somewhere around 1.7 million times. And back at the park rehearsal, the song has continued to take on a life of its own.
Oh, wait.
Keep going.
I got sick of the sorrow, but I wanna see you tomorrow.
With Shamir, we kind of go back and forth with this song since the last show even.
Yeah.
And it's been one of those fun spots for us. For sure.
Yeah.
But it's fun. I enjoy it. But, yeah. Yeah. Keeps me going.
That's a spicy one.
That's okay. It all sounded nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was good.
Keep it simple, keep it clean. Yeah, that's what you said.
I'm Elijah. I'm the guitarist accompanying Shamir.
We're locking in.
Yeah. How did it feel?
Good?
Yeah. Anything that you're like?
Later on, if we have time, we can kind of run through it again.
After?
Cool. I can clean
it up. It's Shamir Virgo, and you're listening to Viewpoints.
Real. Okay, cool. We're more than halfway through already. Can you believe that? You're doing pretty well for time.
His likability was infectious. Everybody loved him, and he was there's an authenticity, a transparency, an intelligence, and this one's really important. He tunes in to other people, and he will immediately establish strong empathetic bonds. He can get right inside your soul. He was just a part of everybody's heart, you know, like everybody's heart just opened to him.
Shamir is incredibly easy to work with. He is so thoughtful, and he is so sweet, and he is so generous, and I think the things that make him a great friend are also what make him a great collaborator, because he's also not afraid to be like just fully honest and say, that wasn't, I'm not feeling that. Yeah, no, let's not do that. He is great to work with, and he can also hold his own solo.
Shout out to me. You know, yeah. It was a great experience working with him. He's a very, very, very talented and accomplished musician as well as artist. Yeah.
Hopefully I'll see him next spring or summer. We'll see if we can cook up some music together. But most importantly, just have a good time. I haven't seen him in 2 years, so that's long overdue.
He's going to school in Berkeley now, so he's pursuing his own path musically, which is great. Love that for him.
I'm living at Berkeley right now, actually.
Mir, love you very much. I miss you. We'll connect soon. We'll connect very, very soon.
Shamir would submit those first two tracks of his, Faded Love and Roses, to the CIVL Radio-presented Fraser Valley Music Awards in 2020, winning the award for Excellence by a BIMPOC artist, that's Black, Indigenous, Mixed, Race, or Person of Color.
Thank you so much to everybody that's been able to support me in my music, and just be there to support me as a person of color. I just really appreciate receiving this award, and it really means a lot that I've come so far in the little time that I've been making music.
Shamir would go on to win first runner-up in the Dakota Leslie fan vote in that same awards broadcast, and station manager Aaron Levy gave him a call.
Yeah, we're giving you $2,100. Shamir, do you have any plans of what you're going to do with this money?
Oh my, I think I'm just going to reinvest it and keep on working, keep on doing the same thing I've been doing, and just continue my journey of music. This is just really crazy. Oh my.
Through that, I was able to meet a lot of really great people and then gain more opportunities that way. It's been through connections through like Civil or like the UFE campus. It's been opportunities like that, just meeting people and being on campus.
And while Shamir is sure to continue creating memories on campus at UFV while he completes a Bachelor of Arts majoring in communications, his quest to build his career often leads him to Vancouver.
That's where most of the opportunities are, you know, and that's just like how it is. And it's like you have to get up and go where the money is, essentially, if that's like what you are doing to like make a living. A lot of the people I am working with and or collaborating with now, I met through the collective I'm also a part of and work with, Couch Jams Collective. And I had met the founder of Couch Jams, Matthew Yang. We actually met through Amir. So Amir and Matt, I believe, went to school together at Capilano University, and then I guess we had started talking from there and then just continued to be in touch. It started out as literally like an open mic or like a jam at Matt's house, and then through that we built Couch Jams into like a collective where people can come together and collaborate and grow and just, you know, experience just different art by other people that look like us. Our open mic series operates out of the Vancouver Black Library, so out in Chinatown at the Sunwa Center. Every month, we usually host a open mic, and so BIPOC people can come, put their name down, and sign up to perform, and then they're also accompanied by musicians who also sign up to come play for them, and it's a great space to be able to like show your art to a group of people who you might not know for the first time. We use our platform to be able to promote and uplift queer and BIPOC artists out in the city. So giving them like a space to be able to like perform, but not only like just perform their music, but then give them an arrangement and then pay all the musicians for their work. Because I feel like the music scene in Vancouver especially is very like lacking. So there's not a lot of community. There's not a lot of places that you can go to connect with musicians and artists and creatives that also indulge in the same type of work that we do.
And just trying to reduce all of these memories I have of all of the musicals we did into, you know, kind of a short summation to, you know, capture the essence of this wonderful young man. Music for him is more than a craft. It's more than just doing, excelling at performing. It's more than just writing good songs. Music for him is just a thread, part of a thread in the tapestry of developing a community.
It's become like a very integral thing for me because I really stand behind community, and I really love that Couch Jams is able to offer that to so many people.
The music's important, but it's not the main thing. It's a thread that that will tie together a community of people that enjoy each other and bond with each other. That's what it is. That captures what he's all about.
Community is very important, not just with music, but just in general. It's very important for just us as humans. And I feel like a lot of people want community in Vancouver, but that's something that we don't have a lot of here, you know? And so I think it's very important because community is literally like, if you have a community around you, if you're going through a tough time, you're able to lean on that community for support in those times that you might not be able to do things like on your own. And it's very important for you to be able to like have people to like maybe bounce ideas off of. Yeah, that's what I think. It's very important to have community. That's why we started Couch Jams, because we want to be able to bring all the BIPOC people together so that we can like experience and be a part of a community that didn't exist until, you know. Me being from here, I feel like it hasn't separated me from like my culture, but I feel like it's distanced my closeness to it. So like I got family. My family's from Jamaica. I was born here, so I'm Jamaican originally. But I haven't spent very much time there. So in terms of like my music and like that whole aspect, they're really known for like their reggae music, Bob Marley, the Wailers, all of those, you know, that different style of music. None of my music sounds like that. And it's interesting because I feel like also in growing up here and not having like a bunch of, like I have family here, but in terms of just like musicality and being around like that genre of music, I'm very like distanced from it. I would love to experience it more, but in terms of just like my accessibility to that, it's been very limited, you know? So I think in terms of like my experience in that and my identity as an artist, it's almost been like, it's been very internalized. And so like a lot of the things that I feel in terms of like my music and how I should sound, it's not only like the outside, but a lot of how I feel towards myself, like, oh, should I be indulging in this type of music because this is who I am? But then also it's like, if I didn't grow up around it, you know, what am I supposed to do, you know? So it's not like I can just, you know, go and, you know, do it now that I know like this is who I am. It's just a little bit, it's more deeper than that. With my skin being such like the first thing people see, it's important for me to know what gravity and what effect that I might have on people when they see and hear me. And so just being able to understand like that aspect, as well as also like what other people that look like me have done. But I also think that it's important to also realize that people are people, and that just because I am a black artist doesn't mean that I make a certain type of music or sound a certain type of way. despite what is shown through social media in terms of just how artists now are marketed to be, especially people who look like me.
Shamir insists that his love, his passion for music is the primary driving force motivating him, not dreams of fame and fortune.
Honestly, I think that's the issue. I think a lot of artists like want to be big, and that's why they want to be artists. I think for me, like I genuinely just really love, I have a really great big love for music. Like I just, even if I'm not being paid for it, I'm not saying I don't want to be paid for it, but even if I'm not paid for like what I am able to create, like I think the grounding thing for me with like sharing my music, my thing is that like as long as I'm able to touch something in the person hearing my songs, I am happy. I'm sold. That's all I need to feel, you know, blessed.
And how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm in a much better place than I was like earlier this year, for sure. I actually had like a bit of a like a car accident. There's a lot that I feel like could have gone wrong, and the fact that I'm here to be able to speak my truth is a testament to how blessed I am.
Let's have another sample of Shamir's music. Here's part of his latest single, I Don't Need You.
Why couldn't I leave it behind, staying?
That was the last song I was able to work on with Amir before he left to go to Berkeley.
I produced that song in collaboration with another really great producer, Gabe Yaron.
We had finished it a couple years ago.
It's representative of a certain period in time for the two of us.
We were both like going through some things at that point.
I'm very proud of what we were able to make.
Very proud, very happy to be able to point people to it when they ask about my music.
I don't need you anymore.
He gets it.
There are some individuals that are destined to make the world a better place, and he's one of them.
Who he appears as in his songs is exactly who he is as a person. And I just can't wait for the rest of the world to get to know that.
For Viewpoints and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Mike McCullough.
So thanks so much to Mike McCullough and his many guests for filling in for us this week. A great documentary again. Thanks to all our journalists who took over the show for me over the past weeks with original and beautiful documentaries. Jules Bugiel in Montreal, Quebec. And to our BC journalists Pamela Hassan and Smithers, as well as Mike McCullough in Abbotsford. Please come back anytime. To our national editors who help coordinate production, Victoria Fenner and Maureen McEwen. Merci. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative. If you want to get in touch with us, please write. Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. Okay, that's it for us this week. And until the next,
you heard
ciao.
Me twice, and I'm on my last excuse.
This episode is a rerun.
And though it's crazy, maybe it's not your intention, but what if maybe the problem is you? And I say, I don't need you anymore. I don't need you. No, 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 no. All out of patience, I'm all out of love to give you now. I don't need you, I don't need you anymore. I said waiting, not anymore, foot out the door, I'm saying I ran out of room for you, cause every time you hold me once, you hurt me twice, and I made my last excuse. And though it's crazy, maybe it's not your intention, but no more maybes, I know the problem is you. And I say that I don't need you anymore, so I don't need you. No, 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 no. All out of patience, I'm all out of love to give you now. I don't need you, I don't need you anymore.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. radio@frequencynews.ca.
Going down and set it straight, when all is said and done, it ain't about you. Thought you were my missing piece, but the
safe. So I don't need you anymore. So I don't need you. No, 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 no. I'm all out of love to give you now. I don't need you, I don't need you anymore. I don't need you, I don't need you anymore.
There is not enough money in the world for which we would put our children or grandchildren in the hands of LGBTQ plus activists.
This Marriage Equality Achievement means so much for our community, especially LGBTIQ young people.
The feedback that we got, we listened to that, we took it very seriously, we listened very genuinely.
They claim that there are no protections based on sex for the transgender people like myself who rely on this medical care.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Daniel Osias. Our news rep crew is off for the holidays, but speaking of queer news, this week's special show will take a chronological look back at some of the stories they've reported in 2024. It's not a top 10 list by any stretch, just a collection of items featuring some of the more interesting voices from the past year.
25,600 minutes. How do you measure a year?
Let's start by winding the clock back to the news wrap of January 15th, 2024.
The January 13th election of Lee Ching-te as president reinforces Taiwan's liberal reputation on LGBTQ issues. As vice president of the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, Lee was instrumental in getting marriage equality legislation through parliament in 2019, a first for Asia. He took his presidential campaign to Taipei's LGBTQ Pride Parade last October, another first. Lee's two opponents for the presidency favored building closer ties with the People's Republic of China. In his victory speech, Lee placed Taiwan's independence at the heart of the global struggle for democracy.
Taiwan 告诉全世界,
we are telling the international community that between democracy and authoritarianism, we will stand on the side of democracy.
Lee will be inaugurated on May 20th.
The Republican-controlled Missouri State Legislature was anti-trans ground zero on January 17th. On that single day, 8 anti-trans bills were debated. Measures affecting access to gender-affirming health care and appropriate sex-segregated public facilities, as well as legal recognition of gender transitions. The Show-Me State has shown its transphobic agenda with a total of 49 anti-trans bills in the House and Senate so far in January 2024. Rabbi Daniel Bogard has a 10-year-old transgender son. He came to testify against a bill as he has visited the state capitol many times. This time he said it was so that my son can poop at school without being bothered. He told the committee he was desperately trying to avoid moving his family from their ancestral hometown. He said, "I'm begging you just to leave us alone." Then Bogard was asked to speak not as a dad, but as a rabbi.
If you look at Jewish history, you will see that there have always, for as long as there have been Jews, there have been trans Jews. We have normative understandings. The normative, regular, exegetical understanding of Adam, like Adam and Eve, is that Adam was born as one intersex, non-binary being with all the private parts. We have stories that suggest that Abraham and Sarah, these are 1,500-year-old Jewish texts I'm talking about, had fertility issues because they were intersex. We have stories of Jews in the shtetl in Ukraine 200 years ago transitioning and being accepted as men in a place where women wouldn't even count in a prayer quorum. You just have to look at Jewish history to see this. And look, the Mishnah, the basis of Jewish faith today, 1,800 years ago, describes 6, 7, or 8 different sexes that humans are, because being trans is just another way of being human.
That was Rabbi Daniel Bogard of Missouri.
In the words of Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban, there is not enough money in the world to force us to let migrants in. And there is not enough money in the world for which we would put our children or grandchildren in the hands of LGBTQ plus activists. This was Orban's latest social media delivered response in his ongoing war against the European Union. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen announced this week that more than the equivalent of $25 billion in funding will remain frozen until Hungary meets minimum EU human rights standards. Funds are being withheld because of the government's dismantling of democratic norms, gags on academic freedoms, and persecution of minorities, especially LGBTQ people and would-be immigrants. One of Donald Trump's favorite autocrats, Orban is also accused of rampant corruption.
A drag queen story time in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, set the Guinness World Record for the largest ever attendance at such an event. Rather than in a library or bookstore, the city's venerable Philadelphia Gay News teamed with the tourism-promoting Visit Philadelphia to hold the historic event at the National Constitution Center. It was the June 1st kickoff for the city's Pride Month. Drag queen story times have increasingly been targeted by far-right groups, the insurrectionist Proud Boys in the U.S., and similar groups in the U.K., Australia, and elsewhere have threatened actual violence against performers and venues. They show no regard for the safety or well-being of the parents in attendance, let alone the children they claim to be protecting. Guinness officials set the bar and were on hand in Philadelphia to count the crowd of 263 parents and kids.
So today, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA, you had 263...
Guinness credits H&M, the Marsha P. Johnson Institute, and Gay Letter with hosting the most people attending a drag brunch in June 2023. 412 people were present for that Pride event in Brooklyn, New York.
Recent questions about the ethical conduct of U.S. Supreme Court justices are rocking confidence in the judiciary. That could change the political landscape for LGBTQ people and other marginalized groups that have depended on the courts to uphold their rights. The same justices who have expressed opinions opposing those rights are facing the spotlight of scandals involving lavish gifts and concerns about unbiased judgment. Right-leaning Justice Clarence Thomas has received literally millions of dollars in vacation travel, a high-end RV, and tuition for his grandnephew from a wealthy benefactor interested in influencing the court. Thomas wrote of the Dobbs opinion that overturned Roe v. Wade that marriage equality rested on the same shaky ground. Justice Samuel Alito has received questionable gifts on a smaller scale. He has also voiced skepticism about the Obergefell decision. Critics of Thomas and Alito find clues to their biases in the conduct of their wives. Ginny Thomas was active in fomenting Donald Trump's January 6th assault on the Capitol. Justice Alito blames his wife Martha Ann for flying flags representing support for that insurrection over both of their residences. Progressive journalist Lauren Windsor played the role of a supportive MAGA Republican to chat with Martha Ann Alito at the June 10th Supreme Court Historical Society reception. The occasion allowed Alito to hoist her true colors.
You know what I want? I want a Sacred Heart of Jesus flag because I have to look across the lagoon at the Pride flag for the next month. I made a flag in my head. This is how I satisfy myself. I made a flag. It's white. It has yellow and orange flames around it. And in the middle is the word vergogna. Vergogna in Italian means shame.
Thailand will soon be the first Southeast Asian country to open civil marriage to same-gender couples, a bill that extends them the same rights as their heterosexual counterparts passed its final reading in the Senate on June 18th. The House of Representatives overwhelmingly approved marriage equality in April. Next comes the rubber stamp approval of King Maha Vajiralongkorn. The new laws will then take effect within 120 days of its official publication in the Government Gazette. Macha Forin is a founder of the Thai queer advocacy Sangsang Anakat Yawachon Foundation. She reflected on the long-fought-for victory for Deutsche Welle.
I think we have been struggle for almost 2 decades to advancing right to family for LGBTIQ people. We lost some of our colleagues along the way, but we have been involving with a lot of young activists. This marriage equality achievement means so much for our community, especially LGBTIQ young people.
Thailand will be Asia's third marriage equality country, following Taiwan and Nepal.
Budapest LGBTQ Pride Parade brought more than 30,000 people to the streets and set gay U.S. Ambassador David Pressman once again in direct conflict with far-right Prime Minister Viktor Orban. Pressman hosted a pre-parade family-friendly gathering at the home he shares with his husband and their twin sons on June 22nd. There he delivered a scathing critique of autocratic Orban's machinery of fear and his increasingly repressive crackdown on sexual and gender minorities in Hungary since taking power in 2010.
Orban and his sycophantic cronies have fostered blatant societal animus against LGBTQ people, even though same-gender sex is technically not illegal in Hungary. Anti-bias protections based on sexual orientation are on the books. However, this Eastern European nation has its own version of Vladimir Putin's Russian no-promo-homo law and bans gender-affirming healthcare, legal gender change, and adoptions by queer couples. At his family pride event, Ambassador Pressman said that he was originally scheduled to speak at the Hungarian Parliament building until a senior member of Orban's ruling party blocked it. Here are some of the words they did not want to hear Pressman say.
We gathered for a celebration of families, of freedom, and of love. All things that are increasingly under attack for LGBT people in Hungary, at a time when democracy itself, in this country and around the world, is confronting unprecedented and serious threats. The fact that LGBT people and democracy are both under increasing attack is no coincidence. Fear is something that those who seek to undermine democracy trade on, and their currency is too often you and your families. Our currency may be fear, but ours is love. And in the end, freedom and love will defeat division and fear.
U.S. Ambassador to Hungary, David Pressman.
We'll get back to more LGBTQ plus voices in the news of 2024, but first, This Way Out kicks off 2025 with a favorite from the past year.
The job description starts with be fabulous all the time.
The mayor calls me on my cell phone and cares what I think.
We can change the world by being more fabulous. And you have that power every single day.
Under 18 kids can buy a gun, but they can't watch a drag queen tell a story. Really, I thought we had moved past it. And now I'm realizing that this is sort of the life that I'm going to have the rest of my life, is dealing with this, because this isn't going to go away overnight.
Lessons in Fabulousness from San Francisco drag laureate Darcy Drollinger. Next time on This Way Out.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
We're speaking of queer news, 2024 on This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Daniel Wasias. The queer year ended with a historic hearing at the U.S. Supreme Court, but there was more. one U.S. national political convention that was predictable, and another with unplanned changes, and a queer pressure campaign in Australia that made the government count its blessings.
The rights of LGBTQ people and programs and policies to encourage diversity, equity, and inclusion were frequent targets at this week's Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 78-year-old unrepentant rapist and convicted felon Donald Trump accepted the presidential nomination of his party for the third time. Of all the bizarre non sequiturs in his meandering 90-plus minute July 18th speech, this one was easy to miss.
We will not have men playing in women's sports. That will end immediately.
Trump's pick for vice president is junior senator J.D. Vance of Ohio. His record of far-right positions like a total ban on abortion and climate change denial all but ensures an extremist administration if Trump wins election in November. The plan is laid out clearly in the document Project 2025, a blueprint of right-wing intentions echoed in the Republican Party platform. Other speakers during the four-day convention highlighted how those plans are consistent with current legislation targeting trans people in Republican-dominated states across the country.
They stand for DEI, which really means division, exclusion, and indoctrination, and it is wrong. They can't even define what a woman is.
They promised normalcy and gave us Transgender Visibility Day on Easter Sunday. And let me state this clearly. There are only two genders. And we are made in God's image. Amen.
This fringe agenda includes biological males competing against girls. And the sexualization and indoctrination of our children. Republicans understand that Americans don't want woke equity, they want God-given equality.
At this week's Republican National Convention, that was Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, Georgia Congressmember Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Wisconsin Senator Ron Johnson.
U.S. President Joe Biden is passing the torch of the Democratic Party to Vice President Kamala Harris. The 82-year-old Biden has been a stalwart friend to the LGBTQ plus community during his long-storied career. As Vice President to President Barack Obama, Biden caused what was a major stir at the time when he upstaged his boss in announcing his public support for marriage equality. It happened during a May 2012 interview on NBC's Meet the Press.
Look, I just think that the good news is that as more and more Americans come to understand what this is all about is a simple proposition. Who do you love? Who do you love? And will you be loyal to the person you love? And that's what people are finding out is what all marriages at their root are about. Whether they're marriages of lesbians or gay men or heterosexuals.
A disastrous performance in a debate with Republican nominee Donald Trump in late June was a career ender for Biden. Party leadership convinced him that he was not the best candidate to defeat the would-be dictator. He reluctantly made his decision known on July 21st. It became official with an address from the Oval Office 3 days later.
I revere this office, but I love my country more. It's been the honor of my life to serve as your president. But in the defense of democracy, which is at stake, I think it's more important than any title.
Biden unequivocally endorsed his 59-year-old Vice President Kamala Harris to the top of the Democratic Party ticket. The party in turn has rallied behind her in the first days of a reinvigorated campaign. Married dad and U.S. Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg was pleased with the Harris candidacy. He described his initial reaction during a July 22nd interview on MSNBC.
We happened to have the TV on in our kitchen as she addressed the campaign staff in Wilmington. It was just as we were putting the mac and cheese out for our son and daughter. And it was amazing when my daughter, who's about to be three, pointed to the TV and said, "What's that?" I just felt goosebumps as I heard myself saying, "That's Kamala Harris, and she's going to be the next president."
The presumptive Democratic presidential candidate also has a long history of LGBTQ plus allyship. As Attorney General of California, Kamala Harris championed the state's first same-gender marriages.
By virtue of the power and authority vested in me by the state of California, I now declare you spouses for life.
That was a moment in the history of the ongoing fight for the civil rights of people. There are some things for which we should have no patience, because justice delayed is justice denied. When we are talking about the fight for civil rights and for equality and equal justice under law, we should not have so much patience that we deny people justice.
Harris kicked off her campaign with a speech at West Allis Central High School in West Allis, Wisconsin, on July 23rd.
Before I was elected vice president, before I was elected United States Senator, I was elected Attorney General of the state of California, and I was a courtroom prosecutor before then. And in those roles, I took on perpetrators of all kinds. Predators who abused women, fraudsters who ripped off consumers, cheaters who broke the rules for their own gain. So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type.
The Australian Bureau of Statistics will include questions about sexual orientation and gender identity in its 2026 census. The ruling Labour Party had made a campaign promise to conduct an inclusive census. However, officials had apparently ended up omitting any LGBTQ questions in a misplaced desire to avoid a culture war controversy. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese responded to the widespread criticism from queer rights groups and his own Labour Party last week, saying that questions about sexual orientation had been added. The absence of questions about gender identity prompted renewed criticism. That issue was addressed, and Treasurer Jim Chalmers updated Australian Bureau of Statistics policy again late this week during an interview on the Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
The message that we want to ensure that Australians hear from us today is that we understand the feedback that we got. We listened to that. We took it very seriously. We listened very genuinely. We said that we would find the best way to do this, and I believe that we have and we will. And the ABS will continue to refine the actual wording of the questions now that this additional topic has been added.
There's still another painful omission. One that Intersex Human Rights Australia CEO, Dr. Morgan Carpenter, finds devastating. In his words, it means we won't get much needed information on the health and well-being of people with innate variations of sex characteristics.
Gender-affirming healthcare for trans patients under the age of 18 was the issue before the United States Supreme Court this week. The historic December 4th hearings considered a constitutional challenge to Tennessee's ban on all pediatric transitioning treatments. The case is called U.S. v. Scrimeti, with Tennessee's Attorney General Jonathan Scrimeti as the named defendant. Challenging the ban on behalf of Tennessee families with trans children was the ACLU's Chase Strangio, the first transgender person to argue a case before the nation's highest court.
This law, we believe, is unconstitutional, and perhaps the scariest thing for all of us is that Tennessee's arguments would apply if Congress tomorrow banned this care nationally for adolescents, for adults. They claim that there are no protections based on sex for the transgender people who, like myself, who rely on this medical care.
Attorneys fighting the ban argued that it constitutes discrimination based on sex. Tennessee Solicitor General Matthew Rice said that it is not true.
Tennessee lawmakers enacted SB 1 to protect minors from risky, unproven medical interventions. The law imposes an across-the-board rule that allows the use of drugs and surgeries for some medical purposes, but not for others. Its application turns entirely on medical purpose, not a patient's sex. That is not sex discrimination.
The whole thing is imbued with sex.
Progressive Justice Elena Kagan begged to differ.
I mean, it's based on sex. You might have reasons for thinking that it's an appropriate regulation, and those reasons should be tested and respect given to them. but it's a dodge to say that this is not based on sex, it's based on medical purpose, when the medical purpose is utterly and entirely about sex.
The treatment of young trans patients with reversible puberty blockers and hormone therapies can often be life-saving, literally. That's the opinion of virtually every professional medical and mental health organization in the United States, including the American Medical Association and the American Psychiatric Association, along with the American Academy of Pediatrics. However, Justice Brett Kavanaugh and other conservatives cited the United Kingdom's discredited CAS report, which claims that pediatric gender-affirming healthcare is too risky. He also pointed to Sweden's backpedaling on the issue as a reason to say that the jury is still out on whether the benefits of puberty blockers and hormone therapy outweigh the risks.
If it's evolving like that and changing, and England's pulling back and Sweden's pulling back, it strikes me as, you know, pretty heavy yellow light, if not red light, for this court to come in, the nine of us, and to constitutionalize the whole area when the rest of the world, or at least the countries that have been at the forefront of this, are, you know, pumping the brakes on this kind of treatment because of concerns about the risks.
Kavanaugh and Justices Amy Coney Barrett and Neil Gorsuch are all Trump appointees to the court. Gorsuch famously authored the surprising 6-3 Bostock decision in 2020, the first time a ruling involving a transgender person was handed down by the court. It found that federal laws banning employment bias based on sex also protect lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender workers. However, Gorsuch was notably silent during this week's two-hour-plus hearing. U.S. Solicitor General Elizabeth Preloger questioned the constitutionality of the Tennessee law. She asserted that transgender people should be a protected class in anti-discrimination laws.
If you're approaching this from the standpoint of saying, is this a group with a distinguishing characteristic that has no bearing on their ability to contribute and that needs some protection from the courts, I think if any group qualifies, this one does in light of the current laws and what might come in the future.
A ruling in support of the Tennessee ban would most likely validate similar bans on pediatric gender-affirming health care. They've been enacted by Republican majorities in more than a dozen other states, and some of them continue to be challenged in lower courts. A decision by the Supreme Court is not expected until next June.
Finally, a quick and clever queer quip from Sir Elton John brought the house down this week on CBS TV's The Late Show with Stephen Colbert.
You weren't always Elton John. You were born Reginald Kenneth Dwight.
Yes.
Which is also a lovely name.
It's a name. And as soon as I could change it by deed poll, I did.
Well, it's Reginald is the male version of Regina, right? Which means queen.
Thank you.
We've been speaking of queer news for the year ending December 31st, 2024. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. News Wrap is written each week by Greg Gordon and Lucia Chappelle and produced by Brian DeShazer. News Wrap volunteers featured in this week's special collection were...
I'm Michael LeBeau.
I'm Joe Bainline.
I'm Ava Davis.
I'm Marcos Nahila.
I'm Sarah Montague.
I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
I'm Kaylin Hardman.
I'm John Dyer V.
I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Melanie Keller.
Thanks to them and to the rest of this year's News Wrap readers, Brian DeShazer, Nico Raquel, Alan Tejamo, Elena Bakken-Levy, Daniel Huesias, Wendy Natividad, David Hunt, and Lucia Chappelle. The cast from the movie soundtrack of Rent performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks John Dyer V of Winston, Oregon, and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this nonprofit program possible. Ask us about how you can join them. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email us at info@thiswayout.org. Or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon, associate producer Lucia Chappelle, overnight production CEO Brian DeShazer, and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Daniel Huesias. Thanks for listening, online at thiswayout.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And on 2CCC, Gosford News South Wales, KPFA, Berkeley, California, WRFN Nashville, Tennessee, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned for a queer new year.
When I say beat, you say banter. Beat. Banter. Beat.
Banter. When I say beat, you say banter. Beat. Banter. Beat. Banter.
Join us every Thursday at 1 on Sweet.